people talk about humans being the weakest link in the cybersecurity equation, they're not the weakest link. They're just simply the most targeted link.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sean Duby, Principal Technologist Americas at Sempris, and welcome to the HIP Podcast. When I take our dogs for a walk in the evening, I often encounter one of my neighbors, a young man, walking his elderly dog. He is always, always completely bent over his phone and oblivious of his surroundings. The complete opposite of being in the moment. If he weren't for the fact that he sticks to the sidewalks, I'm sure he'd have been run over by now. At this point in 2025, most of us have at least one foot in the digital world, and some of us, like my neighbor, are fully immersed. And this world is not neutral. It's designed to play on human psychology and physiology to drive deeper involvement in social media, for example, regardless of the consequences to the individual. The digital world, cloaked in anonymity and freed of the constraints and social norms that are our guardrails in real life, make it easy to bring out the worst in us. Basketball coach John Wooden said, "The true test of character is what you do when no one is watching." This is the realm of echo chamber extremism, online harassment, predators, and cybercrime. Much has been made of the TTPs, tactics, techniques, and procedures used by cybercriminals, but far less is mentioned about the psychology of how they work and the psychology of how they trick the rest of us into revealing our secrets. And with the explosion of AI, it's not getting any easier. My guest today is Dr. Mary Akin, world-renowned professor and cyberpsychologist, which is the study of the impact of technology on human behavior. In the interest of time, I'll just point out a few of her many career accomplishments. Dr. Akin is professor of cyberpsychology and chair of the Department of Cyberpsychology at Capital Technical University, which is Washington, D.C.'s premier STEM university, and professor of forensic cyberpsychology at the University of East London. Professor Akin is a member of the Interpol Global Cybercrime Expert Group and an academic advisor to Europol's European Cybercrime Center. She's a fellow of the Royal Society of Medicine, a member of the Medico-Legal Society, and an international affiliate member of the American Psychological Association. Dr. Akin's work inspired the CBS primetime TV series, CSI Cyber. Her landmark best-selling book, The Cyber Effect, was a 2016 London Times Book of the Year. And she's here in Charleston with us at the Hybrid Identity Protection Conference, where she's presenting a keynote on the cyberpsychology of the human factor in hybrid identity. Welcome, Dr. Akin. It's a real pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Sean.
In the people process technology framework, the people element usually takes a back seat to technology. And yet, despite all the technology and processes layered onto cybersecurity, it seems that people, the wetware as some call it, continue to be the most targeted path to exploit. Why is that?
Yes, wetware. I mean, people are dealing, they come to the incidents with a very old piece of technology that's about a million years in development, the human brain. And the issue with that is that our senses have been developed in real-world contexts. So if you take something that's sort of core in terms of hybrid identity or any form of online transaction, trust is a core principle. So how do humans learn to trust each other? Well, they use all of their senses. So they're visual, auditory, haptic, you know, shaking hands, smell, to make an assessment about another person. And the problem is those senses fail us online because online is a very lean medium. And therefore, the senses that we've evolved with over hundreds and hundreds of thousands of years will fail us online. And for me, that's the root of the problem. So how do we, if you even take something like a definition of trust, in the definition of trust, it's a belief system. Again, belief is a Christian construct and has no place in hard science. So you believe that you can trust somebody. And that means that we shouldn't be trying to take trust and impose it on cyberspace. We should actually, given how difficult the environment is and the complexity of the environment, we should actually be conceptualizing or focusing on zero trust, no trust. And there's a phenomenon which I describe as the trust paradox. And the trust paradox dictates that if you have zero trust and you always have to verify, paradoxically, that's what builds trust online. And when we talk about cyberspace, you know, my favorite conceptualization of cyberspace, I mean, we're here in the real world. But when we meet in cyber contexts, like in Zoom or another video meeting forum, that's not just transactional. We're entering a powerful psychological space. Online, what we call cyberspace, is a powerful psychological space. The best conceptualization of the structure of cyberspace comes from the US military, from the Joint Protocols, whereby they describe three layers of cyberspace. So you have the physical network layer. That's the hardware, the infrastructure that actually connects everything. Then you have the logical network layer. That's the communication ability afforded by the physical infrastructure. And the third layer is the cyber persona layer. That's us, the humans. And while the first two layers are very well protect us in terms of cybersecurity, the third layer is not. And people talk about humans being the weakest link in the cybersecurity equation. They're not the weakest link. As you put it in your question, they're just simply the most targeted link.
In your writings, you say that identity is much psychological as technical. Can you explain what you mean by that?
So hybrid identity environments succeed or fail on security and infrastructure, but also on how people trust, perceive, and interact in those environments. So are people compliant in those environments? Do they work according to the rules or do they take shortcuts? And if they take shortcuts and they take risks, all sorts of, you know, shadow IT system risks, that's what creates vulnerability in a system. And the point about that is attackers know that. And therefore, they target human error. They target human fatigue. They target biases, and they target those entities much more so than they would target firewalls or encryption. So hybrid identity, conceptualize it as a cyber psychological battlefield. Attackers weaponize cyber psychological vulnerabilities. As I said, users take shortcuts and risks. So defenders must build psychologically resilient systems that are trustworthy, transparent, and have low friction authentication. And that can all be conceptualized as human-aware defenses. We want our systems to be robust, resilient, safe, and secure. But we also need the humans who use and operate those systems to be psychologically robust, resilient, safe, and secure. And then ultimately, it's the combination of cybersecurity protocols and cyber safety protocols that will deliver 360 resilience.
You had mentioned earlier about how humans perceive trust based on millions of years of evolution and how in a few very short years, those cues are gone now. So what are some of the differences between how people behave in the real world and how they behave online?
So as cyber psychologists, as I said, we conceptualize cyberspace as a place, as an environment. In 2016, NATO actually ratified cyberspace as an environment, acknowledging that the battles of the future would take place on land, sea, air, and in cyber contexts. So once you start thinking about cyberspace as an environment, now you have to think about how human behavior mutates or changes in that environment. So you've got powerful cyber psychological drivers that come into effect. One is the ODE, Online Disinhibition Effect, work of Suler, 2004. And it dictates that people will do things online that they will not do in the real world. And risk-taking is one of those things. Additionally, you have the power of anonymity online, or at least perceived anonymity. And again, you'll see all sorts of behaviors that people will do in cyber contexts that they would not do in the real world. And if we think about anonymity, it is actually a superhuman power of invisibility that comes with great responsibility. So if you take hybrid identity specific implications of this changing behavior in cyber context. So let's take online disinhibition. In terms of attacker behavior, it could lead to more aggressive phishing and impersonation, and manipulative attacks can thrive in that context. In terms of user behavior, people being disinhibited, you might get oversharing of personal information, careless clicks, and reduced caution and increased risk-taking. So what would be the defense strategy in terms of hybrid defenders? So simulated phishing that could mimic disinhibition triggers, although I'd put a caveat in place that the simulation of phishing has been extremely popular and deployed by companies. And increasingly, it's being met with resistance by employees who object to being treated as some sort of lab rat. So I would caution that if you are going to use that sort of deterrent or preventative training, if you will, that it should be applied very carefully and in a transparent way, so that it's constructive, trying to upskill and empower people, not trying to catch them out.
Not trying to punish them.
Exactly, exactly. Or treating them, as I said, like a lab rat. Oh, let's experiment here and see what happens. So also in terms of defense strategy, you can have security nudges and reminders, particularly at critical login points. But again, there needs to be balance that that's not overdone. You know, there's a phenomenon called MFA fatigue, which is that people get so fed up with being repeatedly asked something that they'll eventually just game it and click yes, 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 or whatever, just to make it stop. So any solutions have to be applied in a way that is cognizant of human behavior. And you want to support and empower people so that their tech skills grow and thrive, but not overpower them to the point that they become helpless, what Seligman, the psychologist, described as learned helplessness. And I think anybody who's ever manned a IT ticket desk in an organization will know exactly what learned helplessness is. So it's that balance. And how do you inculcate that balance in your security design? You do it by involving cyber behavioral scientists.
Well, that the phenomenon that you described, I've also heard called MFA bombing. The same idea, MFA fatigue, is you talk about cyber behavioral attack vectors. Is that what you qualify MFA bombing as a cyber behavioral attack vector? What is a cyber behavioral attack vector, and how do they influence our susceptibility?
So the cyber behavioral attack vector is the routes that perpetrators use to actually try to gain access to a system. And the range of perpetrators, from state-sponsored to state-condoned to sophisticated threat actors to cyber criminals to hacktivists to cyber espionage to targeted violence and terrorism, you take your pick. There's a broad range of, you know, malicious threat actors. In addition to that, there's an increasing range of vulnerabilities in terms of insider threat within the organization. Effectively, we've seen that insiders have, the phenomenon is actually mutating and changing over time. And you have a couple of interesting things happening that are, you know, specific to insider. And this is, you know, the vulnerability of the organization, and insider threat is also a cyberpsychological attack vector, except it's happening inside the organization rather than somebody external. And what we've seen is, you know, an insider used to be an anomaly, something that spontaneously occurred. An employee with a grievance, somebody got overlooked for promotion, somebody that the boss screamed at, somebody who had some sort of idealism or some sort of external radicalization, you know, a Snowden type, if you will. But now what we're seeing is active recruitment for insiders on dark web forums. So say somebody, you're a particular bank, and somebody's looking for a way to compromise that institution, trying to get credentials, and actively looking and recruiting, saying to people on these forums, do you work for this bank? Do you want $50,000, $100,000? Active syndication. I wrote about this in my book, The Cyber Effect, and predicted that this would happen. So that syndication takes chance out of the equation and taps into sort of other behavioral attack vectors, like people who are in financial difficulty, can't pay their mortgage, can't pay college fees, can't pay. And that creates a vulnerability. And now if you go actively trying to recruit people, then that can come together in creating an insider that might not have happened otherwise. So it takes chance out of the equation and turns it into active recruitment. Parallel to that, we've also seen the growth of insider threat as a service. Now you've got people in organizations who are also desperately in need of money. Usually money tends to be one of the primary motivators, although you can have other motivations. And they will offer their services for hire on anonymous forums. So again, it's hard to counter that because that's something that is happening spontaneously, where you have people who want to compromise an organization and people offering their services. And then the topography of the net and the dark web and dark net specifically create anonymous forums for those exchanges to take place. My prediction is going forward, I believe we'll see the evolution of what I describe as agentic insiders. So imagine you've got a future workforce with agentic AI, and the agentic AI is corrupted to act within the organization. So that's my job, is to look around the corner and see what's coming next. In terms of straight up cyber behavioral attacks, what we see is threat actors, they exploit cognitive shortcuts that people take. And one of these cognitive shortcuts is what's called the authority heuristic. And that would be a compromise whereby you get an email instruction to say the CIO, CFO, CEO wants you to do something urgently. And you know, we're sort of hardwired to do what we're told in an organization when you've got a hierarchy. And that is an attack vector that is exploited by threat actors. Then you've got the exploitation of cognitive bias. And effectively, an example of that would be, say, an overconfidence bias, where a person working in an organization might have excellent technical skills and they become overconfident in that they'll never fall for that and they will become less vigilant. And we see this specifically with cyber fraud, that the two most targeted groups in terms of cyber fraud for a whole range of scams and fraudulent activities are young people aged 18 to 25 and seniors. And that's sort of counterintuitive because people think, well, this youth, this generation that have grown up, you know, as digital natives, grown up in cyberspace, how could they be vulnerable in that way? And they're vulnerable because they can be careless with their data. And they will jump from one site to another just to get $10 more off a pair of sneakers. So that creates the vulnerability in terms of what we describe as digital exhaust. Then you've got seniors, and they're a generation who are very careful with their data. They understand privacy as a construct, but they're not as tech literate. So you've got two populations that are targeted, but for different reasons. And then the third sort of prototypical cyber behavioral attack vector is exploiting decision-making under pressure. And one of those can be time pressure. So when you get a message in and it says, urgent, this needs to be done now, immediate login required, that's a time pressure instruction. When you couple that with cognitive overload at the end of the day, people might be more likely to respond in terms of stress and fatigue. So all of these are human vulnerabilities that are targeted. And at the point in time that we now, you know, it was always humans versus humans in classic cyber attack scenarios. Human attackers, human targets. We've come to a stage now where the cyber criminals, cyber threat actors are now increasingly using AI against, in a human context, what is primarily just human defense systems, stepping aside from the technology. And if you conceptualize it as something with the strength of GPT being pointed at you like a fire hose, and that is what is a human you are trying to withstand. Not possible. So therefore, we need to augment human defense. Not by doubling down on the technology, but by doubling down on behavioral protocols that are going to help humans. I believe going forward, that will look like human agentic AI co-workers shadowing users, employees, as they're going through their daily tasks, but shadowing in a behavioral context and jumping in to assist when something looks like it's a threat. And that's not AI versus humans. You know, I'm a behavioral scientist. The premise of artificial intelligence is that it can replicate or replace human intelligence. As behavioral scientists, we barely understand how the human brain works. The thought that we can build something to replicate something that we don't fully understand is a flawed premise. So I'm much more in favor of what is known as IA, intelligence augmentation, It comes from the work of Licklider in the 1960s, who wrote a brilliant paper, Man-Computer Symbiosis, which predated where we are now in terms of the internet, in terms of systems, in terms of you know, agentic AI. And effectively, it's the premise of that symbiotic relationship between man and machine, both working together to support each other. Imagine it as an agentic AI angel that sits on your shoulder, helping you understand, having that long, robust memory, dealing with cognitive overload, dealing with all these behavioral triggers, and mentoring and coaching through process. To me, that'll be the ultimate solution.
Well, thank you, Dr. Aiken. This has been both a scary and a hopeful discussion. I've never heard of the concept of the agentic assistant to help protect you against what's happening on the other side. This is the Hybrid Identity Protection Podcast, and thanks for listening.